And good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's May 20th. 39 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Erica Martin. Good morning.
Good morning. Temperatures for today, Leslie, are going to be a lot cooler than normal. We're seeing low 50s as your expected high temperature. 51 is your expected high with overnight lows hovering right above the freezing mark at 33 degrees. We'll be seeing some showers, which is good. We certainly could use that precip and some isolated thunderstorms. They're really just going to be isolated simply because they're going to be triggered by the colder air that's going to slide in. There's a cold front moving on through, and there's also a little bit of a trough that's just going to pretty much destabilize the atmosphere enough to trigger just some isolated thunderstorms. But more importantly, we have those showers, and that's what we're looking for. Our radar already picking up on some showers. So for Thursday, we're going to get warmer. We're climbing into the upper 50s then, and it looks like we could see a chance of showers early and then clearing. And the second half of Friday into the first half of Saturday is where I start to track another system that will move through, bringing us scattered showers. I'm not expecting any downpours. However, it looks like we'll see some kind of an improvement there in the drought monitor. And also, you could see a changeover Friday night with that precip, simply because temperatures are going to be at the freezing mark on Friday night. For Memorial Day weekend in its totality, we're going to keep it cool. In the low 50s on Saturday with a mix of sun and clouds. More sunshine on Sunday, upper 50s. I was hoping for a 62 maybe, but we're not going to get there. 58, 59 degrees, that's the max. But on Memorial Day, you will be hitting 65 degrees as your expected high temperature. And then on Tuesday, you'll at least get to the 70s. So just a cool stretch right now due to a cold front warming up by next week. The good news is we do need those rain showers. And the even better news is those winds are certainly starting to subside. They're dying down a bit. They're going to be a little breezy for today, but that's definitely helping with a lot of these wildfires that are taking off.
Right. Okay. Erica, thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
It's 8:08. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Again, it's the KPCW Local News Hour. Stay tuned. I'll be checking in with Park City Superintendent of Schools, Jill Goodday, along with Park City School District Business Administrator, Todd Hauber, talking a little bit about some of the business discussed at yesterday's meeting. Park City Manager Matt Dias with a preview of the agenda for Thursday's City Council meeting. And finally, Katie Wang with the Park City Film Series with details about the virtual film series. Stay tuned. And coming up, rebroadcast for the Mountain Life today as we kind of complete some of the construction expansions here at the KPCW studios. The first guest will be Daniel Stillman. He's author of Good Talk, How to Design Conversations That Matter, also an expert on the art of meaningful dialogue. And we want to stay informed on COVID-19, but our constant media exposure can be downright stressful. Dr. Tracy Thomas, a psychologist and emotional scientist based in California, talks about how we judge which media we should watch, read, listen to, how often, and how should we digest it. Again, all of that coming up on today's edition of The Mountain Life. It's 8:10.
Hello, this is Bronson Calder with The Colony at White Pine Canyon. I, along with Kurt Peterson, are thrilled to have joined Bob Marsh on the Colony sales team. We are longtime supporters of KPCW and its voice in the community. Tour information and lot availability can be found at thecolonywpc.com or 649-3411.
8:10 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Board of Education met yesterday afternoon on the phone to recap some of the agenda items. I have the superintendent of schools, Jill Goodday, will be joined by business administrator Todd Hauber, I'm guessing, shortly. Good morning to you, Jill.
Hello. How are you, Leslie?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Hey, let's first just start talking about access to school board meetings. Everyone else in Summit County has implemented the Zoom meeting platform. The school district has not. How come?
So we work with something called Livestream, which usually does a brilliant job for us in recording those meetings and keeping an accurate record along with our board docs platform. So it's all an integrated system and usually works really well. What we had been trying to do is forego the conference call line, and we were trying to double up with Google Meet, which is like a Zoom type thing, along with the live stream, and that's where our sound was getting kind of garbled. So last night we went back to the conference line system within a live stream so that we can have those recorded, because of course that's how we do our minutes and everything else is from those recordings.
Yeah, I get that now that you understand the integration and why that's important, that it matches up with the board docs platform. But, you know, you've heard from KPCW, our general manager this week. We, of course, complained about last month's meeting as well. I tried to tune in yesterday with my work computer, and I couldn't get on. I mean, I checked my JavaScript, my Adobe Flash Player, both intact. So what's the secret? If somebody wants to watch and can, I eventually got it up on my cell phone, but I could not watch from my computer.
Oh, good. I do not know. I would have to look into that with technology to find out what is the best way. That's interesting that a cell phone would work, though. You would think it would be the opposite.
Right.
So because I'm actually there and not dialing in, I'm not having that same experience, obviously. But we are, with trying to maintain the social distance for those of us that are there, we are pretty far away from that microphone. And I think that's probably another challenge that we're working on. But hopefully very soon we'll be back at our in-person meetings. And as I said, if you get a chance to look back or sound back to that recording, hopefully it picked up pretty well and pretty clearly.
Yeah, but now it's double duty here because I sat through
right.
It. Yeah, right. And again, you of course have a very low pitched voice, and Todd Halber, he's on the phone with us as well. He was wearing a mask, so thank you for that, Todd. But at the same time, your sentences just dropped off, and I just felt like I lost about a third of the conversation. Tell me though, I did manage, as I mentioned, to get online with my phone, but with such a small screen, I couldn't see any of the documents that were being presented on the screen behind you. Documents that were not online as of Monday. So when do those meeting documents get posted?
Right. So our architects finished their updates to that presentation pretty late in the day. So as soon as we got those would have been uploaded as a PDF, and those are all still available. The architect's PDF will be going out to our families and our large email list of media and influencers later this week, so that people can start taking some time to read through their excellent work, great recommendations, and really leaves the community in a great place to be thinking about short, intermediate, and long-term plans for the facilities. They've really done a nice job capturing the voice of the community, so I think people will be pleased with that document.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that in just a few minutes. But again, your report wasn't there. Todd's budget report wasn't there. So do these documents need to be posted 24 hours before the meeting, or is that not a requirement?
A lot of these things are supportive to the commentary that we're making. So mine was basically a PowerPoint that had very few words on it. It was more, images, more just to try to bring some of the concepts to life. But, the meeting as it happens, right, that's the meeting. So if there are some supportive documents, we always do try to get those posted, as soon as we can so that people can take a peek at those. As last night there were no decisions made. There were no votes on anything. This was really informative.
Yeah, and I guess that's my point Superintendent, is that I couldn't see the documents. I didn't have the documents before. So, it was like, what good did it me trying to follow
them
along?
Yeah.
With the meeting.
Yeah, and that's funny because I was able to click. When I go in, I often go into Board Docs just as public. I don't actually log in. I just go from the website. And other than our executive content, I was able to click in and see PDFs. I was able to review Todd's budget documents before we got to the meeting. So I don't know, but it has to be some kind of glitch with that, is what you were saying, with the computer, either with Adobe or whatever. So we'll have to, as I said, I'll put that in as a ticket to our tech team to do a little research.
Yeah, I did see them eventually. I guess I just didn't. I was trying to do a preview of the meeting and was unable to do that because I didn't have the information for me on Monday. But talk to me a little bit about, you had mentioned that we've got a platform that uses conference lines. Is that why? How do you hear from the public, or how do you get your other reports done if there's no phone lines for people to use?
Right. So we have asked, and we did post early this month, if that was feedback to please, you know, email or phone call, and we would log that in to the register, which we did. So we actually did have public participation in the school fees discussion. So we actually do, you know, hear from people via email, via phone call, and we do register those comments or post those comments. And again, those comments were posted, especially with that fees issue, before the meeting or, you know, during the meeting, so that the board could reference those. Actually, it was before the meeting because the board members mentioned that they had read those before they came. So, you know, we are always going to work to be responsive. With a Zoom meeting posting on, you know, Facebook, I'm not sure that's necessarily public participation either. It's a social media platform. It's not really a news capture or a meeting capture, you know. So I think it's just, we're in odd times. We will hopefully get through those odd times quickly, and I do hope the public knows. And every email is read, responded to, every phone call is taken seriously. You know, we are in communication all the time.
Yeah.
So we do hope that people know that.
And I guess what the Zoom platform allows is a conversation. All the school district allows is input. There's a big difference,
correct.
I think.
Correct. Correct. Right. But to have our board members in a business meeting trying to look at Facebook comments where while they're trying to have a business meeting is really an interesting ask.
Okay. Who shall I ask, Todd or you, Superintendent, about the master planning, the project options? Or do you guys both want to chime in? Is that what we should do?
Right, either of us. Okay. I think, Todd, if you want to go ahead and start.
Well, let's just talk. You were giving project options, basically lined out high school, middle school, elementary school, and then sustainability. I added them up real quick, totaling $232 million. Or is that, do we need to back out? I mean, if we do the $48 million high school project, that includes the 6.2 work? Is that how it works?
Right. That is correct. It does not all add up in a line. Some of those things replace other things. And some of what you're looking at are escalation costs. So it all depends on the timeline that we approach these different phases.
Okay. So we're still talking lots of millions of dollars. Let's talk a little bit about, and again, these are, I guess, going to be posted on we'll put them on our website, but I guess on the pcschools.us as well. Let's look at then project options, and we have four different strategies. Now, are these phases or are these options? I mean, if we do strategy one, do we move on to strategy two, or do we just choose a strategy on which to move forward with?
I'm going to see if Todd wants to chime in.
You there, Todd?
I am. I'm having a hard time following the conversation. I can only hear your questions.
Oh, you can't hear Jill?
I cannot. Sorry.
Okay. Is that better if I put you both on there? It's a new soundboard. I'm sorry. We're still trying to work out the kinks. Can you hear each other at this point, Jill? Todd?
I can hear Todd. Todd, good morning. Leslie was asking for clarification regarding phasing.
Okay.
Yeah, phasing and options.
Yeah, so we've got strategy one at $7 million. We've got strategy two at $48.5 million, strategy three at $84 million, and strategy four at about $38 million. So do we choose one of these strategies, or is this a phased-in project here?
So the strategies are designed to show us the ability of how we can phase it in. And so we can begin with just the relocation of the ninth graders into the high school, and then we can see what the build-out cost is to accomplish that part of the phase with the anticipation of the further phases coming online or strategies as outlined on the documents. And that helps us to put the financial picture together as well so that we can see how to bring the financing in to the different levels or the different phases of the projects.
Okay.
So, Todd, to clarify, though, if we already do the $5.1 million or $7.5 million high school phase one, then the next phase is not in totality, in aggregate,
correct,
because you'd back out the $7.5 million you've already completed.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Got it. So at this point, we just need to kind of hear from the public in terms of what we move on with?
We do. So this is a part that can get pretty exciting, hopeful, and aspirational for our community, because now that we have these ideas firmed up or outlined, now we can start having those discussions. What's important to do first? What's important to think out long term? The architect team was terrific about giving us the opportunity to look at maybe even a 10 or 15 year planning horizon. So this is nothing that has to happen in the midst of an economic crisis, right? But it's something that in doing the planning and having a solid plan, we have then the benefit of time to be able to think about when to implement and how to have things staged and phased. So this is really a great gift to the community to be able to look at these things and paint a picture of what the future of the school district will include.
Okay. So will we spend some time talking about that then at next meeting?
We will.
In depth on that? Okay. I'm going to move on because we got lots of other stuff to cover. Todd, you presented a preliminary budget to the board last night. You're projecting a 2% increase over last year's, which puts the operating budget at about $82.2 million, a 2% increase again, as I mentioned, over this year's budget. And I believe that the revenues are due to new growth. Is that?
Yeah, we're anticipating still new growth in property tax with development that had been in place and ready to operate as of January 1st of this year. So that's the lien date. And then the values are established at that time. So there was growth before coronavirus hit. So we're anticipating that revenue to still show up.
All right. So when we talk about growth, we're talking about development, new development, as opposed to enrollment growth. Is that correct? Are we seeing any enrollment growth?
So the enrollment growth, we're actually anticipating a reduction of about 1.3% of in enrollment. So that will have an impact on our state revenues that we're eligible for.
Yeah. And I heard you say what you're concerned about is that the state legislature is supposed to meet mid-June in another special session about the same time the Board of Education has to make a decision on next year's school budget. And apparently they have asked you to come up with like three different budgets. I think I heard you say a 2, a 5, and a 10% budget cut.
What? Correct. So at this point, what we'll be putting forward is essentially a flat budget or a budget based on the FY20 available revenues. So that's what we'll move through the board's adoption process. The state legislature, as it prepares for its special session in June, has asked all of the school districts and charter schools, as well as state agencies, to go through and identify a 2%, 5%, or 10% reduction. So it's not technically a full budget. It's just recommendations on how we could reduce budgets to fit those targets. They'll then take that under consideration as they come into their June session.
Okay, so we're good at that 2% because that's where we were with fiscal year 20. What are we looking at if we were to cut the budget by 5 or 10%? I mean, how much money would have to be cut there?
Sure, yeah, so those become serious. Those are the targets for 5% would be for the school district about $1.3 million, and at 10% would be $2.6 million. So those are significant reductions. We would really be looking at the program offerings that we have at the school district, as well as looking at other resources that we have to meet that kind of a target.
You said there are a couple of options. We've got healthy reserves, which could carry us through at least the next fiscal year. But if the coming year is the economy is really weak, then what do we do?
So what we have are other options is obviously continue budget reductions, or to look at other revenue opportunities, whether it's other state programs that we've not applied for money through, or federal grants that would be available, or also we have headroom within our own property tax rates to generate necessary revenue. But we'd want to get down to the essential programs so that we're not going down a path to try to find money just to keep things status quo.
Yeah, and this was one of the places I couldn't hear. You did make a recommendation. What was that?
So the recommendation that I made was that we would use reserves as we wait for the legislature to determine what budget cuts it will go through. So it's basically use our reserves for 1 year and then look to other solutions in the coming year based on further legislative support and funding.
Okay. And do you put a limit on that, just kind of given what you might hear as the year goes along? I mean, do you want to cut back just in case so you don't have to have a 10% cut?
So we had already, in putting together the 21 budget, we had identified a $1.3 million reassignment of funds. So we have the ability to take those savings that we'd already found and redirect them either into a budget reduction or to refocus them some more into programs that we need for the coming year. So we've, in one sense, have gone through a 5% reduction scenario, but retained the dollars because we didn't actually have to implement cut and reallocate it. So we have that option in front of us as well.
How is this going to impact the negotiations with teachers? We saw a 6% increase in the WPU this year. We saw teachers in the Granite School District get a 5% raise before COVID hit. We didn't have, I guess, negotiations settled. So what should teachers expect now?
At this point, I think we're in a bit of a wait-and-see mode to see what's available as we move forward. Primarily, the increases come as the legislature provides more money to school districts, and that's the piece that's now in question. So we probably need to wait and see where that shakes out.
Hmm. Jill, let's talk a little bit about the student-teacher success plan. This is done, I guess, every time this year. Social and educational equity and addressing the whole child very much at the forefront. How have teachers had to change the way they bring those elements to families whose parents may not be there to help kids get the access they need?
Right. So Teacher Student Success Act plans go along with the school community council process. So those are ideas, suggestions, and an allocation of resources that go right to schools. And that is something that unfortunately is under, you know, one of the state's reviews as a potential area where they may reduce funding. So that's something that would then be amended per school, you know, based on what's available. But in those plans, they do have that flexibility and ability to be adaptive and amend throughout the year to meet emerging needs. So we have had the wonderful support of Park City Education Foundation, who has actually donated $50,000 to different Teacher Express grants from the time that this coronavirus issue has started. So any kinds of supplies or resources that teachers have needed to support distance learning, they have really stepped up and been an incredible community partner in providing resources. So teachers just need to let us know, you know, what things they are needing either through PCEF or through their principal. And then we are trying to make those adaptations and accommodations as we can. So one of the things we did was we sent typically our kids in second, third, fourth, fifth grade use a laptop while they're in school, but they remain in a charging cart. So they back and forth, but we were able to get those because the laptops were each assigned to a specific child. We were able to get their specific laptop that they were used to into their hands within a couple of weeks, which was amazing. And then we were able to get one-to-one iPad devices to our youngest learners. And in doing that this year, we've learned that really K-2, the iPads are a stronger platform for the kids versus handing a second grader a laptop. So we're able to continue to iterate, innovate, and find the best programs and products for the kids to use while they're gone. And as you know, as a regular school year, when we're in school, Leslie, we have that same issue, right? You have some parents who are really engaged and help kids with homework every night, and you have some parents that are just strapped and exhausted and can't. You know, so we always have that, whether we're remote or whether we're in person. But this idea of looking at the strengths and resilience of each child, taking them, you know, from wherever they are and moving them forward is really the strength of the school system. and what we will continue to do, because that, that does put our equity aspiration into action, when we are doing that. So not looking at this time from a deficit lens of, oh no, what did they miss? But hey, what skills did they pick up? We have some students who have stepped up and they help their family with cooking and cleaning, and they wouldn't have done that before because they weren't at home. We have kids who have learned life skills that they would not learn any other way. So we have to look at each of these situations. What are the gifts or what are the silver linings that we can see in some of this?
Yeah, I'd love to have another conversation about all of the successes and challenges about that. But how do we know that the kids did get the education they need to over the last 2.5 months? I mean, you mentioned some of the opportunities there, learning how to cook and stuff. But there's also cases that we had heard of where, kids are working because they're the only ones bringing home a paycheck because their parents are out of work, or it's a single parent home. And now the students become the family's daycare provider for the younger siblings. We've heard of students who don't have enough Wi-Fi bandwidth because everyone's using the family account. So at what point do these students get assessed and know whether or not they're going to need additional help?
Right. So in the, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Leslie. I have the same situation where my third child actually just finished college, and he did that, remotely from home because they too, closed over spring break. And he let us know, he just graduated, he just finished his last final, but he let us know that he basically had to flip his entire 24-hour cycle and do his schoolwork when we were all in bed, because that was the only time he could have enough bandwidth or enough quiet in the household, with everybody trying to do their work during the day. So it is really fascinating, right? There are impacts that we do or don't even know about happening in our households. I had no idea he was doing that until after his last final, and then thought, oh boy, I had no idea. We were all being so loud, with dogs barking or not enough Wi-Fi bandwidth to get to the courses he needed to with that meaty content. But because we are doing some things online and because our teachers are connecting with our students either via a Zoom platform, or actually we don't use Zoom, we use Google Meet or Meetup. But when they're doing that, teachers are constantly checking in, assessing, seeing where the kids are in their reading process or in their mathematics attainment. And because the kids are online with a device, we are able to go into that back end and see reports. What skills are they accessing? What skills are they mastering? What assignments have been completed? When was the last check-in? How long did we spend on that assignment or project? So we do have a good amount of data that the teacher has available to them to be able to start with kids. And, certainly as part of any launch of a new school year or a summer school program, we will have some pre-assessments, see where the kids are, where there are some gaps or where they have excelled, and so where we can then keep them moving. So that will just be a part of a normal, process of what you would do in any school year. Because if you think about it, in any school year, you have kids who relocate into our area from a new place. We have to learn where all of those kids are too.
Okay.
So that will just be something as part of a process.
And we'll see if we can get somebody in to talk about the summer school program that you'll be rolling out later.
So. Yes, Todd Clarich oversees that program, and that's really an exciting new attempt for us to try. And again, as things move towards that green category of stabilization, we will try to get kids in to do any kind of tutoring support small group, and that's part of that Teacher Student Support Act plan.
Okay.
So we will be able to hopefully do some kind of boot camp activities before school starts.
Okay, I need to leave it there, though. Thanks both for your time. Todd, when's the budget supposed to get adopted?
So by law, before the 30th of June,
okay.
But we'll be taking it up at our June regular meeting.
Okay, great. Thanks both for your time.
Excellent. Thank you. Have a great week.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:36. We'll be talking with Park City Manager. Well, the Park City Council meets remotely Thursday afternoon, starting at about 4:45. On the phone with a preview of that agenda, I have Park City Manager Matt Dice. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, first off, can you tell us how Police Chief Wade Carpenter's doing?
Well, I speak to Wade just about daily, and he's been obviously very kind to share sort of his personal journey and was okay with releasing that information that he did, in fact, come down with COVID-19. And, you know, he says it's a tough sickness and it's really kind of knocked some wind out of his sails, but he is home resting. And if you know anything about Wade, he is his typical self and self-depreciating humor, and he is in good spirits, but he says people, you know, absolutely need to be vigilant. And it is a real sickness that really, really can knock some wind out of your sails. So good spirits, but he is sick indeed.
You still there with us, Matt?
Yeah, can you hear me, Leslie? Yeah, I didn't hear a follow-up. There we go.
Yeah, that's better. Thanks. And given his reach with both his staff and in the community, have we seen any spread of the virus?
Well, we've been really fortunate. We haven't seen any spread internally. We obviously worked very, very closely with the Summit County Health Department in terms of contract tracing and cleaning our facility and anywhere that, you know, Wade had been and contacting anyone that Wade had been in contact with. You know, fortunately, we'd had proactive measures in place where we've been, you know, taking great lengths to reduce any staff interaction, making sure that ourselves that we're wearing masks when we're inside municipal facilities and in meetings. And I think we're just really fortunate at this time that we did take those measures ahead of time. You know, I think by now every single member of our police department and administrative staff has been tested. And fingers crossed, we're doing exceptionally well, and we're very, very thankful for the help of the Suffolk County Health Department.
All right. Thursday's agenda, I guess, has the budget headlining the meeting. Will there be more to see other than the additional $250,000 that the council and mayor asked Jed Briggs to set aside?
You know, I don't want to speak for council. I'd be getting ahead of myself. You never know. That was sort of a curveball that they threw us at the last minute. But, you know, obviously staff was very supportive. As you alluded to, they allocated or asked staff to find an additional $250,000 in savings to set aside for COVID-related activities. That likely includes the continuation of either assisting frontline nonprofits to assist those most vulnerable, or some members of council mentioned some sort of a small business assistance program. But really that pocket of money is undefined at the moment, but we have come up with a plan to provide that additional $250,000 strategy. But you never know. I think, you know, things are moving very, very fast. Things are very, very fluid. And we are going to react, you know, as best we can to any additional council requests in terms of next year's budget.
Will there be more details on which projects will be deferred?
So there is very firm detail in this round of the budget. We have a full capital plan. And as you know, any member who wants to pick up, any member of the community that wants to pick up our budget proposal can actually see in detail the capital projects that we are suggesting will be delayed in addition to the capital project that we delayed this past year. So in the previous year, we deferred about, about $1 million. And this next year, we have a plan to defer an additional $1.7 million in capital projects. And there's a list of them within our staff report.
Okay. I guess still some confusion when we plan to have the budget finalized. Is that going to be June 18th or we're taking input until the 25th?
Well, I think we're going to take input as long as we can, but we've been, you know, attempting to be really transparent to the community in that this is a provisional budget. We it probably sound a little bit like a broken record now, where our FY21 budget, which begins July 1st, is really a 60 to 90 day budget. It's a provisional budget, which allows us to get a little bit further into the fiscal year. We hope to have some additional economic certainty about what recovery might look like and what the summer might look like and the fall and the winter. And so we've been trying to be very, very transparent with the community that this plan is really a 60 to 90 day operational plan, and we intend to revisit it with council.
All right. Let's see, a review of the DABC list on Sweet Alley right below KPCW. Any issues with that lease that was last renewed in 2013?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there's actually a fairly colorful history. You know, if anyone wants to take the time to read the staff report, I think the first year that we entered into this lease was 1987. And, you know, I was here during the Olympics when the old liquor store was actually on Main Street, sort of downstairs. And so there's a neat staff report that has some good history here. You know, I think staff feels like this is an important amenity in Old Town, and it makes Old Town a little bit more livable. It helps reduce some trips for folks in Old Town that they can walk down our stairs. and run an errand in town as opposed to getting into their car. So we don't anticipate any issues. There is, it's more or less a two-year lease with a two-year extension, and it increases the base amount of the lease year over year based on inflationary factors.
Okay. What are the terms, though, of it? Because it seems like the city offered them a pretty lucrative lease, just given that you wanted a liquor store near Main Street.
So it's a two-year lease with a two-year renewal. There's an inflationary component that increases the base amount.
So what is that base amount? That's what I guess what I'm getting at.
No, that's a good question. I'm just pulling up my staff report right now. So the increase went from $5.80 a square foot to $6.40 a square foot, to be exact.
Oh, you just made a lot of people jealous.
Well, yeah, I know. And I think that's why important, people read the staff report. And, obviously this is something we have to come to council with this recommendation, and they're going to make that decision in a public meeting. So, we hear a lot about making sure that we have amenities in Old Town to make it, continue its ability to be a neighborhood where people live and want to work and play. And so we want to hear from folks. If people have input on this item, we absolutely want to hear it.
Let's talk briefly about the Historic Park City Alliance announcement yesterday that they're moving forward with new car Sundays. That involves coordination with you, the municipality, and the DABC. What's the city's role in making this happen?
So we are, we're excited. I think this is another step in our deep efforts to coordinate and be collaborative. We just received this request yesterday, and we're excited about it, quite frankly. We think there, are potentially some great resources that the city could bring to bear in terms of maybe beginning with a car-free Sunday. I think council has intimated, particularly through the visioning process, that we are excited about this concept and this idea. And we obviously have to share, the letter with council. This would be a city council policy decision to shut down Main Street, a public right-of-way to a pedestrian-only enterprise. So we're going to work our way through the plan with HPCA and with City Council. And obviously, we know time's of the essence. We know small businesses are hurting. Many of them have been closed, or if they haven't been closed, they're just partially open. So in the event that the city could bring resources or infrastructure or technology or marketing and communications to bear to support this local business district, I tend to want to guess that we're going to bring everything we can to bear to make sure it's successful and it's vibrant and it's active. And it sounds like HBCA, did a fair amount of due diligence. They put out an electronic survey. They held a fairly large Main Street meeting with just about every merchant or every property owner. And we're very thankful that they sent us a formal request and outlined their requirements and, the pros and cons and their evaluation process. So we found the letter to be very thorough, and we're excited about it.
Let's see, $97,000, a walkability project between Homestake and Kearns Boulevard. What are we talking about here? There's also some bus stop improvements planned. Are we going to cut these out so that we don't have to have traffic back up?
Well, so this is more of a continuation of an existing project. It's an addendum to a project that our team has been working on the east side of 224, as you alluded to, from Homestake. It will run all the way down Homestake and actually turn the corner at 248 and take it all the way to the Snow Creek intersection. As most of the folks know, about 2 years ago, we did the west side of that corridor, and we improved the bus stop. We widened the sidewalks and made them more pedestrian friendly. And so really this is a continuation just on the other side of the road. That currently that sidewalk is too narrow. When that bus stop is heavily utilized, people are forced into the right of way. And I rode my bike by it this morning on the way into work, and a woman had her stroller on the sidewalk, but she was standing in the street. The retaining wall is failing there. And this might be a reoccurring theme that we hear. Obviously, given the economic uncertainty that we have, there are a number of projects that we are going to recommend to council that we continue under the guise that they have funding from other entities or are grant funded and have other sources. So this project in particular has a $96,000 addendum, but there's three pots of money that are helping pay for this. There's federal money, there's a local transit sales tax match money, and then there's Park City municipal money involved. And so we think there's still a lot to be gained for the taxpayer, and that we have other entities supporting this enterprise, and it reduces our overall cost. And we're about halfway through with the project, and we're making the recommendation that it doesn't make sense to stop it at this point.
All right. Funding membership in the Central Wasatch Commission. What's the city's contribution going to be?
Well, that will be, that will be a city council decision. We brought this to city council a few times, and they had additional questions about the Central Wasatch Commission's finances and what was the appropriate level of a membership. Former Salt Lake City Ralph Becker, who's the executive director, has been up here twice to discuss all the projects and initiatives of the Central Wasatch Commission. Summit County recently allocated $25,000 to continue their membership. And that's really the question we're asking of the mayor and council is, do they wish to continue their membership in the Central Wasatch Commission? And if so, what is the financial threshold with which they wish to seek? And so currently we had been paying $100,000 for several years. They could allocate anything less than that. I anticipate they will, maybe somewhere around Summit County, but I don't want to speak for them. That's obviously their financial decision.
June is Pride Month. Are we going to be installing streetlight banners or anything special?
We are, and this is it's become an annual resolution or proclamation from City Council, but obviously it dovetails very, very nicely with their social equity goals and priorities and to be an inclusive, welcoming community. And so we will have Love Where You Live, LGBTQX banners on Main Street. We will be flying some flags around town. We will be providing additional media and social media and marketing and communications, provided council approves the proclamation on Thursday.
All right. And finally, the city is going to be submitting a right-of-way application on BLM land for a set of stairs on Rossi Hill. Can you tell me about the location here?
Sure. So by way of a development agreement with a developer in town that constructed a few single-family homes in the Rossi Hill area, there is sort of, it's not a great explanation, but there is a goat path through this development, and one of the agreements was that we would improve, or that the developer would actually improve that. So the developer is contributing $75,000 to put in a proper Old Town stairway in this neighborhood. And I think it was a neighborhood ask of the developer, and it happened through the planning process, and it involves the municipality in that the BLM prefers to deal with the municipality and their easements. And so neighborhood request through the development process, and we're just trying to bring that to fruition.
Okay. So,
it's, you know, generally for the community, if they're listening, it's in that area that's right now has two or three sort of single-family homes under construction.
Okay. Matt, anything else you wanted to add?
No, thank you. I think we covered it. I was just making sure that, you know, people are following our processes online. We are getting some actual additional public engagement through that. You know, we're streaming our council meeting live. We can accept your questions ahead of time or during the meeting. And we really hope that, you know, these additional levels of communication and transparency are to everyone's benefit. So we appreciate folks' patience, because at times, you know, there can be technological glitches, and we're just thankful that people are patient with us, but that they're watching and following and participating.
Okay. Matt Dias, Park City City Manager, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie. Appreciate it.
8:51 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, with the Jim Santee Auditorium closed for now, the Park City Film Series continues to offer virtual screenings. On the phone with details, I have Katie Wang with Park City Film. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So how's business?
You know, it's been great. I mean, not the same, of course, as having everyone in person, but the pivot to virtual cinema has been really well received. I think people are appreciating being able to see new cinema. There's a lot available online through Netflix and Amazon Prime, but those are older films. So to be able to see current cinema, something that's curated by Park City Film that we're able to provide through the virtual cinema has been fantastic. And then also the Q&As that we're able to offer now from people all over the world. You know, there's really no limit to the directors and talent that we're able to access. So that's also been kind of an exciting new addition for us. And then, of course, more films, because we don't have just one screen. We can show three or four films, new films every week. So, you know, again, just kind of exploring the opportunity and, you know, kind of as Matt was saying, making things available in a different way has really increased participation in some of our sectors, which has really been fun to see.
Yeah. So how does this work?
For the virtual cinema, so it's basically everything's online, so it's very similar to what you would experience with, say, an Amazon Prime, Netflix, or any of the other kind of platforms where you might access your films. You buy a, quote unquote, ticket, a virtual ticket. Tickets range anywhere between $4 and $12. 50% of that ticket purchase goes back to Park City Film. So that's actually a higher percentage than you'd normally get if you came to an in-person screening. And then depending on the distributor, and this is, we've had some conversations with patrons about this. We probably have about six different platforms we're working with right now, and they're all slightly different, but hopefully not too difficult to navigate. But then you'll have anywhere between 2 and 3 days to then watch that film. So you can, take a break, have dinner, come back, rewatch it. So you'll have multiple opportunities to see that film. But again, these are different films than you'd be able to access anywhere else. And that's really been the push with the distributors and with all the virtual cinemas across the country of it's still curated content. These are new films. Some of the films we have coming up this weekend premiered at the Sundance Film Festival this year. And so you can't see it anywhere else. But the places you can see it will benefit Park City Film, and you can watch them anywhere. You could be in Moab, you could be in Los Angeles, you could be in Park City. And if you go through our portal, it benefits us, which is great.
Right. So the deal is that you have to watch it within a certain time frame. If you pay and don't see it within that few days, then you can't see it.
Correct. Yep. Then you'll need to just pay again. So yeah, you definitely want to pay attention to, you don't want to be the first one in, potentially saying, oh, great, it's on Friday, I'll buy that ticket, and then maybe lose that ticket later if you want to just go and sit down. And it takes maybe 5 minutes to purchase your ticket. So it is something you can be spontaneous about, get your takeout from a local restaurant, sit down with your family, and then just fairly easily rent the film, buy your ticket, and then watch it. And then for a lot of these, you can, with an HDMI cable or with other casting mechanisms, you can just get it onto your screen. So you don't have to watch it on your computer. You can watch it on your, large screen TV, and so somewhat replicate the cinema experience.
Yeah, and that's what I tried. I wasn't successful with that, only on the mobile apps. So what's the deal then? What do you need to do?
I would say the best option that we've seen is if you can get an HDMI cable from Best Buy, or you can order them online, and then it just, you plug that into your computer and then plug that into the back of your TV. And that is by far the simplest way to connect it onto your television. But if you have an Apple TV, a Roku box, we're actually creating a kind of a cheat sheet on our website that should be available later today, so that depending on which platform you're using, and as I said, there's kind of six different platforms we're working with right now, and that is based on the distributors. Unfortunately, we don't have control over that, but how you would then get that onto your TV screen. And then once you figure out how to do it, the next time it'll be a lot easier, of course.
Great. I need that because, it didn't work with Apple TV. you've often had free screenings available during mm-hmm. the regular programming. Are you offering any free screenings?
Absolutely. And that's, I really want to thank, the Summit County RAPTAX and Utah Division of Arts and Museums and our members, because the support that they've been providing to us, kind of our basic operational support, has really been instrumental in our continuation of these free community programs. So we just partnered with the Park City Museum to show last week to show Toni Morrison's The Pieces I Am as a free screening. And then we were able to bring in a poet from Kansas City, Missouri, who's nationally known, for a Q&A the following day. And we have a couple more free screenings coming up. So our intention is to do at least one free screening every month, and we'll continue the virtual cinema for the duration of COVID-19, it seems, certainly through the summer. And I think even when we reopen, we'll probably have an online platform as well for folks that may not be comfortable gathering with large groups. Even when we're in kind of the green zone, and also we'll have limited capacity. So that allows us to reach more people. And then we're also offering, as I said, Q&As, and those are free. Much the same as they would be at the Santee Auditorium. We have, Q&A tonight for RBG at 6 o'clock with the directors, Betsy West and Julie Cohen. We have another Q&A on Friday, another on Saturday with the films that we have in our current cinema. And so, again, kind of adding on some of those components, typically at no extra charge, and then certainly the free screenings, again, at least once a month.
Okay. So any word when you might reopen? I mean, it usually takes the summer off anyway, right?
We normally take the summer off, and so we won't this summer. I mean, we'll still be virtual. So that kind of gives us some nice timing to work with. If you look at a national level most cinemas are looking at about a July to August opening, and that's in part for safety measures, of course, and depending on where they are. Los Angeles and New York might be a little farther behind than other locations. But there's also, you know, there's a lot coming out that's new in the independent world, but some of the major blockbusters have been delayed until the fall, and some of the bigger independent films have also been delayed for fall releases. So we're optimistically looking at a September opening with the social distancing measures in place. We'd probably have between 50 and 60 people that would be allowed in the space so that we can have, I mean, anyone that's been to the Santee knows it's a very large space, which is fantastic right now. So 450 seats, and then you can have a 10-foot perimeter around kind of clusters of two, and we're just mapping it out and working with the city and, of course, the Summit County Health Department to make sure that, you know, it's absolutely bulletproof and making sure that our patrons are safe and comfortable and can enjoy the theatrical experience, but in a way that's, you know, it's not going to be a health issue.
Okay. Well, I'll just direct people to parkcityfilm.org, and they can go online to see what you offering, so I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, parkcityfilm.org, and then you can also go to our Facebook page. We'll post our new films, and you know, as I said, check out that there are some great Q&As as well.
Okay. Hey, Katie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Katie Wang is the Executive Director of Park City Film. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. News time now, 8:58. 45 degrees here in Old Town Park City, and boy, we had some snowflakes falling during the interview with Matt Dias there. Crazy. Expected high today, only about 51, I'm guessing, is what we heard from ABC Forecast Center's Erica Martin. An overnight low tonight of 33, looking for showers and a chance of some isolated thunderstorms today. We've got a cold front, again, moving through. Thursday, we're going to see partly sunny skies and highs back into the upper 50s with a 20% chance or so of an early morning shower. And then another round of some showers, it looks like, Friday night into Saturday morning for Memorial Day weekend. Looking for a mix of sun and clouds, cooler temperatures, only getting up to about 60 on Saturday, 58 on Sunday, and then back up to 65 for Memorial Day. Stay tuned. Coming up, headline news from National Public Radio and a rebroadcast of The Mountain Life. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.